Okay, then we are going. We're rolling here.
Back to it. Back from the holidays.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
You refreshed?
Yeah. Everybody get some good toys?
Feeling it?
I'm all right.
I resolved to do another podcast today.
Still haven't gotten the Millennium Falcon I was promised when I was like 9. Did you ever get one of those?
I played with a friend's Millennial Falcons.
No,
Millennium
I did too. Yeah.
Millennial. Falcon.
Whatever. Yeah. They were several years in the future.
Came with avocado
toast.
Those damn
birds are just screwing everything up.
Yeah. No, it's true. Well, it's good to see you guys. You seem taller.
Feel taller.
Everybody's growing a bit. I still sound awesome.
You sound slightly less horrific.
It is slightly less, yes. But, you know.
All right. Well, let's get into some theme music.
All right. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
If somebody likes it.
So yeah, here we are in January. The snow has been falling. Temperatures.
There was some snow falling here, actually.
There was.
Little.
We had,
a little.
No. A little is a lot for here, dude.
Where we live,
any, like, even like 8 snowflakes, you're like, there's fucking snow.
Yeah, this town kind of loses its collective shit when any snow falls.
Yeah.
And a little bit has fallen twice this year, so... I mean, my Facebook feed fills up like,
yes,
like Jesus just came back in town.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're back. You know, we've flipped over the calendar to 2018. And I think, you know, one of the things that sets in for at least one of the things that I find that I'm aware of, and this is probably just because I have little kids, is like just the difference between the run up to the holidays and then the time after the holidays when like, you either get excited that you could kind of get back to the world as it is, or you have a little bit of the holiday hangover thing going
on.
So I use this. Well, there was an article that came out not very long ago about by Stereo Gum, and was talking about this in context of Coachella. They actually said, okay, here we are in 2018. There's the first big festival or the big festival that they circled. I don't even know what the dates, what the actual dates of Coachella are. It doesn't matter. But what they said was, these are the acts that we would like to see. Because I guess there has been some thought about maybe not as many bands on these big circuit shows and fewer bands, more big bands, like high profile acts, not Glenn Miller, and so with that in mind, basically they put together a piece that said these are the acts that we would like to see reunite and play like a big concert show.
Sure.
And they broke them down into, and we won't go through this whole thing. Nobody needs to hear all that, but they broke them down into like these are some that will happen someday. One is like you can imagine a world in which at least it's possible. That was like the second category, and then the third category was there's no chance. So anyway, some of the acts that we talk about from time to time on this show were mentioned, but some were some that we haven't talked about at all that I thought were intriguing. So anyway, I will just posit that to you guys. If there was an act that could get back together, like let's assume, like we're not talking crazy talk here, like
we don't have
members
the bell
have
in
to
here.
Be alive.
Yeah,
members have to be alive.
No, Mark, I think he wants us to guess.
Yeah, not read it. I want you to guess.
Well,
that's not the article.
Well, we knew so
here, let's listen
lovely.
To that.
That's lovely.
I
Simon and Garfunkel maybe.
I'm gonna put my hat in the ring for one that's not gonna happen because I've got to get my. Every show plug in there.
Yep, they were mentioned.
I'm going to say the Smiths.
Yeah, the Smiths were mentioned
knocked
as
knocked over
a,
my drink trying to get the bell in there.
Yeah, the Smiths were mentioned as an act that would not be getting back together.
Well, we didn't say his name yet. That's when the bell comes in.
Was that like Voldemort?
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, anyway, among the ones...
What about the Buzzcocks?
Yeah, sure. I think the Buzzcocks would be interesting.
Nah, never mind.
A couple that where it could have at least you could at least imagine a world in which it was possible. They were mentioned. One was R.E.M.
That sure, makes sure. sense.
Another was Rilo Kiley, who we don't talk about at all on this show. But apparently, I didn't realize when that band split that it was somewhat acrimonious.
I didn't either.
And apparently, it was a little bit.
Well, and Ginny Lewis kind of like was a little bit more successful solo, I believe, than they ever were as a band.
Yeah,
as far as I know.
Anyway, and I will just say that if I were gonna pick an act, you know, the Beulah guys are just right up the road. They're already in California. There are many of them, so it would take some getting together. But
I saw them.
They did not make the list.
I saw them in Austin.
I saw them in Portland, Oregon.
Probably 15 years ago or so. Like, and they did a great cover of Psycho Killer.
Oh, yeah, I could believe that. Yeah. Anyway, we don't have the sidebar on that. But anyway, I just thought it's an interesting article. If you find it in your latest newsstand edition of Stereo Gub. I highly suggest you give it a read.
Boy, I am looking at this. Mark has the Coachella lineup behind him.
Not anymore, he doesn't.
He did.
There we go.
Boy, there's a lot of suck on that. Like, whoever's pissed off, like, there's reasons why they should be. A Perfect Circle is one of the big headliners. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually like that band more than I do Tool, which is not saying much.
I was going to say, how much does that actually fucking mean?
Yeah. Like, Perfect Circle is like his Depeche Mode side project.
Oh God, who? Yeah, whatever.
He also makes wine in Arizona. I'm talking about Maynard.
Yeah, of course. I've had some of his wine, but that's on the headliners are on the Eminem stage. It's also Portugal the Man, Migos, A Perfect Circle, like those fit together. Cardi B, like that fits with anything. Miguel, King Cruel. Like,
yeah, it's almost like some of these lineups almost look like they're put together by AI.
It looks like somebody did a bunch of that. Looks like somebody did a bunch of Molly and then threw darts at names on the wall and tried to get them together.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. Anyway, Chic. It's goofy
featuring Nile Rodgers. Wouldn't that freak out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is not necessarily to spend the first 10 minutes of the show reading off things that other people can't see, but it just strikes me interesting, like. This is the way that you get out in front of the festival season is to start making these wackadoo suggestions like right here as we are in the first week of January. So anyway, if you're out there listening, bands that are thinking of getting back together that did significant material, yeah, do it.
Well, it looks like a Belly reunion is
that everybody's been clamoring for
on the weekend stage. Yeah,
maybe. Okay, so do you guys want to talk about why we're really here?
Well, this artist is actually listed on the Eminem stage.
That's true.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about Archie Marshall, the South Londoner, who also has gone. He's gone by many names.
Didn't he do that Sugar Sugar song in the 70s?
No, that was the Archies.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah. He's also not Gary Marshall. Anybody named
noted, yeah. noted director and brother of Penny.
Yeah. But no, he is the sort of, I guess he's 23 now.
Yeah. Prodigy kid.
Yeah. Prodigy, who kind of took the UK and to a certain extent, the US by storm with, a previous release and has just been one of these guys who, actually the record that we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, his alter ego is King Cruel, K-R-U-L-E.
Yes, and the record that we're going to talk about tonight is called The Ooze,
O-O-Z.
And Pitchfork called it its top rock record of the year, which we will talk about, no doubt.
Is it a rock record?
And I know. Well, that's a fair question to ask.
Is it top?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Anyway, he's been seeing a lot of buzz. And it didn't start with this record, but it seems to have intensified with this record. So we're going to talk a little bit about the latest from producer, musician, singer, songwriter, lever of tracks in the backseat of his car, Archie Marshall, better known as King
Man,
Cruel.
This shit is all over the place. Like, I had listened to like 3 tracks of it and I ran into Kevin at Christmas at our parents' house. And I was like, I'll bet critics are losing their shit over this.
I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Oh,
record.
I thought you might be. Imagine.
Yeah, because there are lots of aspects of it that you talk so much shit about, but then there's also aspects that you like in other people's music And so I can't even begin to imagine what your feelings on this are,
it's
Ryan.
It's funny. I spent most of the time thinking about what Ryan was thinking about it as well.
Did you really?
Because
I
really
did the whole record.
Like, that's how well,
that's weird.
I
did too.
To this one.
I was wondering what I thought of it. Here's the deal. Like, there's a couple tracks that just don't do it for me, and one of them does have that, you know, LP left in the back seat.
Almost all do, dude.
I would not say that.
You did not listen to this.
There's a lot of warped LP.
There's a lot of warped LP stuff on
well,
this.
Well, there's stuff that's more egregious than others. But no, I fucking love this record. Now, I listened to it a second time, and I didn't like it as much as I liked it the first time, which is
I will say this. I think that repeated listenings sound like there's enough nuance and, frankly, just like sort of off-kilter weird shit going on in here that it is... It doesn't sit the same way.
Well, I was shocked the first time I heard it. I was like, what the fuck is this? And I just kept thinking, like, he's like genre hopping, but somehow it works.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like he's invented a new genre, which apparently he's already done with, what do they call it?
I'll agree with that to a certain extent, for sure.
What was it, Blue Wave or something?
Dark Wave and Blue Wave.
No,
Blue
well,
Wave
yeah,
is
there
the
was
one.
Dark
Blue
Wave,
Wave
but,
yeah.
Oh, with him? Yeah, that that was Tori Moi, yeah.
Anyway.
Chill Wave, excuse me.
But, I mean, it's got cool jazz. There's elements of punk in some of it. I got a little bit of, like, psychobilly a la Horton Heat.
Sure.
Like, a little bit. And it's just all over the place. But somehow it doesn't sound like he's schizo.
Well, and here's the other thing. There's plenty of time for us to talk about the specific lyrical content that he dives into, but the overarching motif of this, it kind of gets presented like it's a breakup record, but I feel like there's a lot of other stuff going on here that doesn't feel as simple as a breakup record, but I do feel like that in terms of lyrical content, at least some of the reason why critics are falling all over themselves about this album is that sort of like verbal desperation or whatnot feels honest. Like, that's the best way that I can kind of translate that. So,
well,
anyway.
It feels fearless to me. Like, he hasn't learned that you're supposed to, you know, color within the lines. And so he just does whatever the fuck, and it mostly works. So, you know, it's that 23-year-old, you know, a lot of times that'll lead you to make really poor decisions. I did plenty back in the day. But right now, he's just kind of firing on all cylinders. Save for a couple songs that, you know, echo Mac DeMarco, which I don't care about. But, like, I don't know how you mix cool jazz with punk and somehow it turns out okay on the other end.
I will say this, and this is not the record that we're talking about, but part of what unlocked this album for me was I was just doing some digging through his back catalog, and I came across his 2013 performance of Easy Easy on Letterman. And that once I saw that that segment, I thought, okay, well, there's an aspect of this that I can understand why people originally flipped out over him, and this record doesn't sound anything like that song, but it's certainly worth a listen. I do think that we ought to spin one of these. So, what do you guys think? Like, maybe the Dumb Surfer is the one that is kind of bandied about as one of the singles off of this album, and it's got he's kind of a micromanager on the visual front with regard to some of these videos. So why don't we roll that one to start with?
Sounds good.
So yeah, if it has been asked, you know, like because a lot of critics have written about how hard to categorize this record is. Somebody actually asked the question, like, what does it actually sound like? And one of the things that I noticed is that there is a lot of sort of off-kilter saxophone throughout. And that happened because, and we just watched the video for Dumb Surfer, which you can dial up on YouTube. I certainly recommend it.
That was a very disturbing video.
It is. Yeah, it's a zombie band.
I'm almost 100% convinced that the Dumb Surfer, he says, don't suffer in the end of it. And that I've heard that before, but watching it, like watching that video, I think that's just like a different phonetic spelling of what.
Well, dude, I made the joke earlier about Sugar Sugar, which is, you know, of course, by the Archies, which is based on the Archie comic books. But in that video, he kind of looks like Archie Andrews, but if he had a heroin problem.
and everybody's sweaty and clammy. And
I enjoyed this video much more than I enjoy this album.
Yeah, I was discouraged.
I dug it.
That's actually one of my least favorite songs on that record, personally.
See, it's weird. Like, I like it. It's got that Bristol trip-hop kind of thing going on.
That's what I was going to say. Right. Like, this album to me, like, okay, I'm going to put my 2 cents in. I think that the kid deserves every fucking accolade he gets. This is an incredibly interesting, singular...
Ambitious
vision. However, could we cut out about 45 of the minutes and... Like after like
it's a little overlong.
It runs, but I mean, if you look at it as a mood piece, it's fine. But it's sort of like if you got Tricky, and you got like mid-70s Tom Waits, and you got
throw in some Morphine,
it's some Leonard Cohen,
the band, not
Leonard
the drug.
Cohen and Morphine, and they all together wrote a soundtrack for a noir movie. It's kind of what this is in a lot of ways.
I feel
now
like
because but the Tricky part is like having Tricky or like that really black Bristol. Trip hop from like the mid 90s is essential to understanding what that shit is saying.
Sure.
Kevin is, we kind of derailed from.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your topic,
all right.
But.
Well, and there's a lot to unpack about what Shane just said that I absolutely want to talk about. I was just going to say that it's interesting. The guy who ends up playing saxophone on that record happened to Ignacio Salvadores hit up Archie on Facebook with a YouTube video and got invited to play on the record, and I can't see how that happens very like the
it's
kind
pretty
of
interesting.
Great. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's I think that the sound like it's hard to argue with the idea that the soundscape is lush, but it's also intentionally murky and it is not always clear necessarily where it's going. But anyway.
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's not a pleasant listen by any stretch of the imagination for me, but it doesn't make it a bad listen.
I feel like where it's going to end up netting, like, and I was fascinated the first time I listened to it, and then it got a little bit less interesting the second time.
But I feel like
where it's going to net out for me is like it'll be the cool thing to put on in the background as mood music.
Well, that's another thing that I was thinking. Like when I was listening to it, I was thinking
darkened lounge somewhere.
That's where it's going to be. Look, there are individual songs that sound amazing on that, and overall it sounds amazing. But after a while, it gets so samey that it has to be background music. You know.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess the point is that it's a dark road, and the sentiments are not in any way uplifting. But it's also like he's also kind of defiant about it. You know, some of his backstory. It sounds like he was kind of a kid that was sort of hard to control,
hard to manage,
Spent some time in a facility. Where he said, I think the general gist was that, like, the doctors were wrong a lot, and I think it just made him... But his parents also, like, really
indulged his
creative side.
Well,
yeah.
They're both creative.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I just hope he doesn't go down, like, an Amy Winehouse path or something, like... Because he's getting heaped a lot of praise right now. Now, his stuff is not as commercial as hers was, so...
I don't understand... Like, he has it so far, like... Just because his music start doesn't necessarily mean anything about like his.
No, I know it's just a lot to take on when you're that young.
Well, what I will say in his favor, like in his like I think this is a smart move on his regard, is after that Letterman performance, there was really a lot of attention that hit him on the most of the previous record, and he quit doing interviews. Like he would, there it was the beginning of a U.S. tour, or still on the early side of the U.S. tour, and he quit doing. He didn't do most of the interviews at most of the places that he went. So, anyway, I think he retreated a little bit. It sounds like
that's probably good.
Yeah, and in this case, like this is a very like it's hard to argue that this isn't an introspective record.
I mean, so. We don't know though. I mean, just because he's, I don't know. Like I don't like to draw that conclusion that just because someone writes in like first person, or we can draw the conclusion that the songs are necessarily about them. They're definitely, you know, inward looking as far as what those characters are. They may be about him, they may not be. I just think that that's kind of a, not for you personally. I just see journalists fall into that trap a lot. That they definitely assume a lot. Having had many friends that are music journalists, I've had this argument many times where.
Sure.
They assume that, you know, just because, you know, Tom Waits wrote about characters in third person, could have been writing about himself and a lover of his at a bar, but that's the way you chose to present that. You know what I mean? So.
Well, right. I mean, there's always a certain amount of the final word that stays with the artist in that regard. And so, and maybe it sounds like Archie Marshall's not talking. So. You know, to that end, like,
he
people can kind of make
need
their
to. Like, he's getting plenty of attention and letting the music do the talking.
It's better for him if it can be kind of an exploration. And there's a lot to, like, clearly there's a lot to unpack here. So,
shall we sample another one?
Yeah, let's do that. All right, Shane.
Can I pick one?
Yeah, sure.
I like Vidual a lot.
Okay, let's do it. She asked me in detail how to get to where I'm from. But I told her it won't work, cause she needs to be raised in dark. Some crimes when I was young, and now my brain is gone. Haven't found the right size sponge to rinse through all its wrongs. I put my trust in many things, but now I know that's dumb. So I don't trust anyone, only get along with some. Told that girl again one time, and now I know it's done. And my eyes were so forlorn, but her eyes were so forlorn. I said, hey, ow, where you going with my gun? As my head starts to plunge, so I follow where she's gone. I'm all about it. Shane apparently is not a huge fan of that song, but, like, you want to throw, like, The Clash against Horton Heat and then murky it up in the production? Sold.
If you like The Clash or Horton Heat, then, yeah. Maybe.
Well, I like both of those things.
I know. That's why it works for you.
Kevin, thoughts?
Anyway, the Paste review of this record, I meant to mention this, calls it chock full of cosmic fuckery. And, like, I can see a little bit of that. Like, even in the, you know, sort of rockabilly undertones of what's
like
going
about,
on there. Like,
I like in that song how, like, I wish it had been earlier in the record because it is nice. It's not like a shitty song. It's just totally not my thing. But I like how it breaks stuff up. I think it would have been more effective if he had because it's way down in the right.
Well, like, it doesn't really sound like the rest of the record.
No, and I'm saying it would be nice to have it like when it gets a little bit samey earlier in the record. Like those first five songs are all in and of themselves, you know, really well written songs. But definitely, like, I'd start to fucking tune out.
When I was like three or four songs in, I was like, oh, okay, I get this, and I put it off for a while, and we had holidays and whatnot, and then finally listened to the whole thing, got through the whole thing yesterday, and then listened to it again today, and I was like, oh, there's more going on here.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I enjoy the record. I like all the antecedents, or the precedent, whatever.
But I was just like, oh, you know, it's jazzy trip-hop, is what I thought at first, and that is not that.
But there are those elements in it, though.
For sure.
Which, you know, there's a lot going on. It's a very interesting, really dense production work on it. It just sounds good, too. I mean, it's a good-sounding record.
You know, it's funny. Like, we've got a house guest at my place right now, and he was up, you know, chatting with me or whatever. I was like, I got to listen to this record or whatever. And he was like, it sounds really badly produced. And I was like, I don't think so at all.
It's weird.
And, well, it turns out he likes really clean pop production. Like modern pop production. And I was like, oh, yeah, that stuff really bugs me.
You're going to want to walk around the block or something.
Yeah. Blow off some steam somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Like Blink-182 knockoffs? Or like.
I think more like Katy Perry type stuff.
Yeah.
He's going to think this is a little rough.
Yeah.
And it's designed to be rough. Like it's designed to like drag you down into the little bit.
I think they're having some fun with the knob twiddling.
It's just really dense.
Well, and one point that I think we started to come near, and I didn't mention, but that has been discussed a lot in reviews of this record, is the fact that Archie Marshall is not an ardent self-editor, and so we're
throws everything at the wall.
Well. He keeps everything. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of a musical hoarder in that regard. If it feels like there's a bunch extra, and it sounds like guys think that maybe there is.
I mean, what? How many songs?
It's 19 tracks.
19 songs. Yeah. It's almost 70 minutes long.
Yeah,
and over half the album has an incredibly similar, pace and sound, and
I'd be curious how much of this is digital and how much of it's analog. I mean, because
most people record digital these days if they're doing it independently, because analog's so expensive, and plus you can't find like 2-inch tape anyway. It's incredibly expensive now.
Well, and isn't this out on Matador?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of times, what you'll see people do is they'll mix to analog. It's a lot cheaper to do that, but rather than record on it,
But it doesn't have that kind of brittle thing that I sort of associate.
That's because the technology is advanced so much.
Where they add tape hiss and shit?
Well, no, just there's a lot more involved than you think. And also the people that know what they want out of it, digital stuff doesn't have to sound digital unless you want it to sound digital. Like, case in point is what your New Year house guest was saying. Like, he wants that to sound digital. Like, he wants it to sound
clean. Well, he thought it was dirty and underdone. And I'm like, that's kind of the point, dude.
Yeah.
He would really hate Pavement.
Yeah, he really would. What is this?
If you decide you want him out of there, just slap on some Pavement.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy.
What about the voice of Caddy Lee? Hey, do you guys want to do a few minutes with?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of seemed oddly appropriate, and I just heard this song 2 days ago on our favorite radio station, KUTX. Had to get that plug in, as is my wont.
It's a decent plug.
Yeah. But anyway, band that totally went out on top. I'd never actually heard this song, and I've never listened to this whole record, but I've heard bits and pieces of it. And it's a Tribe Called Quest. Record came out in 2016.
Great fucking record.
Yeah.
And the song's called Dis Generation, so let's get into it.
With a capital G, ball in the beat. Status Chris Paul or John Wall in the league. Grab a mic till the knuckles will bleed. Cause I believe the potent and the potent have you geek like speed. If rationale is natural, I will weave. It's all edges and peace. Setting press free on a permanent steeze. I'm in the world where my princess is player. And she feeling my Vader. And my lore grows greater and greater. Pim trails dropping poisonous vapors. Have you shaking like Gator. Been chill, nigga. Process to data. Blu-ray wave, follow a beta. I DVR for later. Cop a monster with a G. I'm a waiter. You can't define. Minus X, Y, Z, Z, it's a generational elitist. Have you cheating virtual think pieces?
See these written words with medical science. Brains defiant, thoughts heavy, baby, they're a major appliance. Leave a tan when dropping to flyness. Do a giant, dude's nice, he tight screwed in with some pliers. Cool with some bias.
God damn, man, that song just pushes all my buttons.
It's a great song, it was a great video.
Yeah.
I just need to go listen to the whole thing.
It's in my car as we speak.
Every single time, and this is a true thing, and I've never, by far, my favorite hip-hop act hit-hopped. How did I say that?
Hip-hop?
Hip-hop act in the world is Tribe Called Quest. I could listen to them 24 hours a day. I absolutely love them. Every fucking time I want to do it. Tribe album, for whatever reason, it's one of the times where somebody else is going to do one.
This
week
is one of those songs that I'm going to remember exactly where I was when I first heard it. Because pulse quickened.
All their fucking
albums. I got excited.
Go back and listen to their first two records, man. They're fucking, actually their first three records, man. They're insanely brilliant. That one, Five Dog died in the middle of recording it. Or he actually went and recorded a lot of stuff solo. But... yeah, man. I mean, what a fitting tribute. And it's funny that you play this because when I listened to this, when this album came out last year, I was like, man, I hope that boom bap hip hop is on its way back in. And the song that I'm going to play for you guys later
Is a testament to that.
It's a testament to that. Yeah, it's some boom bap hip hop too. So,
but yeah, the video is just beautiful, shot in black and white, and just like this kind of rolling pan over.
Well, also again, like it. One of the things that's really annoying to me about rap right now is that there's not a lot of bass response in the middle. It's all like that fucking low end. Like, so if you turn your bass right up, it can like blow it out your car. But it's not enjoyable to do. There's not a lot of like density in it, and so like something like that, with that also that drum, like more like a drum beat, like of a drummer. It's just very satisfying to listen to.
And it's got that leisurely kind of like strumming guitar,
that
like
electric
really,
guitar in it.
Yeah, just really resonant, like just.
Well, also they use that guitar like Q-Tip used to use samples. Like that guitar is as far as I know isn't a sample. It was recorded but used in a way that like.
Well, they probably played it, you know, a couple times and then sampled it themselves.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They played it, sampled it, but used it in the way that old tribe they would use
other people's
samples.
Work.
Yeah,
those guys are virtuosos, or were
just
are and were
utterly enjoyable.
I hope
music.
That they form some sort of new project. I can't imagine they wouldn't, because you know the thing about creative people, whatever their medium is, they can't not do it.
Well, Q-Tip's had a really solid. I recommend to anybody. I can't think of the name of it, but I would highly recommend to anybody listening right now to go and watch a Tribe Called Quest documentary that came out, I think, in 2009 or 2010.
Is it on streaming somewhere?
I can't answer that question right off the top of my head, but it is absolutely brilliant for so many different reasons, and it shows a lot of the things that were going on with Fife Dog is that he had like
what did he die from? Was it
complications
cancer?
from diabetes, and he had diabetes a lot in that movie. And you can it's a fascinating movie. If anybody out there, I don't know the name of the documentary, like I said off the top of my head, but if you find that Tribe Called Quest documentary, came out about 6-7 years ago, go watch it.
The record that this was from, which we've been alluding to, but I don't think we mentioned, is We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. And
Fife Dog came up with that title, too.
This yeah.
That was
another one where, like, my Facebook feed just blew up when he died, and I'm like, had no idea, you guys. Like, and I've heard probably a dozen Tribe Called Quest songs over the years, and not a single one of them have I had any problem with.
There's a huge drop off from like how far much like above they are,
apparently
I can't
everybody
talk
else
all today. Yeah, I just really like this act a lot. So
I always just kind of lump them in with like De La Soul and
they're part of the same collective.
They're part of the Native Tongues thing, which came out around that same time, like the late '80s. Very very different, but they used.
Most Def kind of gets in there a little bit.
Well, and the Native Tongues thing was kind of wrapped around the idea of there being some positivity in the music. Like, even Queen Latifah gets left.
Queen Latifah was a big part of that.
Yeah,
actually.
Like, she's gets included in that movement. So,
oh, Mark just pulled it up. It's called Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Dude, I'm telling you, if you could get it, I guess you could get it on YouTube. It is badass.
Directed by Michael Rappaport, so you might be able to hear
like
some
it's
screaming
on Netflix
in the background.
Too.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Amazon, YouTube, Vudu. I don't know.
Fine call, Ryan.
Yeah, great fucking song.
Yeah, my pleasure, dudes.
In the Guardian review, we're talking about the King Cool record, The Ooze. In the Guardian review of this record, Archie Marshall, the guy behind the name, said of the title of the album, he said it's intended to signify, as he recently told one interviewer, quote, the shit you do subconsciously, like the snot, earwax, spit, jizz, piss, shit, your beard, your nails. You don't ever think, wow, I'm actually pushing all this stuff constantly. My brain's creating all this gunk, this force field. I don't know what that means, but
that's a pretty Dada or beat poet kind
of. Sounds like
respond.
He smokes a lot of weed to me.
Maybe.
I don't know. I got about half of that.
Yeah.
No, well, I get it. I get completely what he means. Yeah.
But I mean, essentially, I think the gist of it is like this record is about the, you know, kind of making your way through the muck. And one of the things that I had us do before we came back into here was I just showed had Mark pull up the Letterman appearance that was a track called Easy Easy that I mentioned the first half of the show off of the previous record. It doesn't sound anything like what's
on
this
album. No,
it's a good
song, but it's more like straight ahead little like downtuned rock song.
Yeah, I
liked it.
Yeah. But I think part of the deal
I like that song a lot.
I do
actually
too.
A lot.
Yeah, but that's I think stuff like that is the gateway drug to the rest of his more current repertoire.
I think I read that in recording the Ooze, like he was listening to a lot of the Pixies and the Libertines.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, good on you. I don't really know dick about the Libertines other than they were a big deal in England.
Yeah, but just because you're listening to something doesn't mean your music has to sound like that. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you can look at, you know, certain artists' paintings and say, I don't want my art to look anything like that.
Or you can look at it and say, I admire that. I'm watching that. I mean, there's like all kinds of different, you know, permutations of that idea.
Well, I do think that one thing we can probably all agree on is that this guy intentionally takes an oblique look at a lot of different things. And his attention span, like, he seems to kind of want to gobble everything up and synthesize it in some way. Now, whether that comes through directly or is some refraction of what he heard in some way, I don't know.
Through the Archie filter and come out the other side as just like this wholly new thing, which, hey, man, knock yourself out. Like, he's definitely not ripping anybody off, but you can definitely see the influences on his sleeve.
Well, and there are little pieces of things, like little tatters of like 90s hip hop or. Go ahead, Shane. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say one other thing that occurred to me that I meant to mention the first half, but didn't occur to me to share until now was. I will preface this by saying that these two artists don't sound anything alike, but one thing that I noticed specific to this King Krule record is that he has a very, and the best way I can put it is Bjork-like tendency to treat his lyrical track as an entirely separate piece of art than the music that is surrounding it. And so sometimes that was always my... It was originally off-putting to me when Bjork was coming up and the Sugar Cubes thing was happening that, like, especially with some of her solo material, that, like, some of those tracks just seem lyrically, like, they're angular and they move differently than the musical pieces do. I feel like there's something similar in that here, even though the two artists don't sound anything alike.
I mean, if you're talking about Bjork, like, some of her stuff is, like, just super straight ahead and, like, some of it's, like, even, like, kind of classic, like, standard sounding pop, and then like she like Birthday with the Sugar Cubes.
Yeah,
that is a fucking deeply weird song. And if
delve
into the lyrics, like you might not would
come out on the other side.
Yeah, come out the other side unscarred.
But like with this King Krule, I think part of maybe what's difficult for me with this is that there aren't those vocal hooks, and I think that relates directly to what you're saying, is that his vocal melody takes on its own kind of life throughout these songs, and it ebbs and it flows, but there's never anything that you can really grab onto there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Sure.
The music in and of itself is, like I said before, like I would never, like, let the kid get his due, man. Like, this is an amazing sounding record, but you definitely... There's not. If you're looking for vocal hooks, they're not on this album.
No, but I do think it's kind of a sexy record, and
sure,
there are probably people right now that are getting their freak on.
You can extrapolate.
That have got this playing in the background.
I said the same thing about Tricky. I mean, Tricky has sexy, weird, dark music, you know, and he's not the best rapper in the world. It's kind of like background, and it's kind of a secondary to the rest of his music, you know.
Yeah. No. Well, one thing that gets mentioned quite a bit is that, and it's funny too because it's often written about almost lyrically by some of the folks who have written about this album, and that's that the producer side of Archie Marshall, that sometimes he just disappears into the music entirely. Like, he's just not, you know, with some of the, like, with tracks like Dumb Surfer, which we listened to earlier, you know, he's out in front of that song for all of it, but that's just not really, he's not necessarily, he doesn't seem to be interested in expected constructs.
Well, it's kind of like what you said earlier, that he's a little bit of a musical hoarder in the way that he constructs these things. And I think that sometimes he prefers to push that vocal up, and sometimes it's not as important, but he just keeps everything. And so it's,
I suspect, for me, some that of it he gets little ideas that he records to whatever medium he's got around him and just keeps snippets and then figures out how to put them together later. Because they're not necessarily always like super cohesive, like verse, chorus, verse, you know, traditional songs. But somehow he kind of does this pastiche that ends up working more often than not for me. Now, when he gets into that Mac DeMarco thing, like, sorry, I got to check out.
When you say that Mac DeMarco thing, you're basically talking about something that's been around with lots of different music. It's that little, it's that guitar thing that,
it's that bendy, yeah, like.
But it's so funny because there's so.
I'm sure it's been around a little bit, but his primary focus.
But there's so many other, not anymore. There's so many other musical elements on this where it sounds like a warped record, but you're so willing to look past that. But you do this thing all the time where you set yourself up in this one way, and you're not willing to ever. But all these other things that kind of sound like that.
But isn't that what's great about music, though? Like,
that's true.
That sometimes,
I totally agree.
Like that it forces us under special circumstances to just, you know, the hell with our rules. Like, you know,
I totally agree.
If it was just that, then I'd have a real problem with it. But there's so much else going on that it doesn't get under my skin. Now, there's a couple tracks where it is kind of the primary focus, and I was just like, all right, next. But primarily, like, this is a hugely ambitious creative project that eventually, over the course of how many tracks is it? 17, 18?
Like 19.
19.
Yeah.
Does eventually, I'm like, all right, well, this is just wallpaper right now.
I do think that there is a video for, maybe it's the English version of Bermondsey Bosom.
Why don't we play Check One? That's the best song on this record.
You think?
I think it is, personally, even though it came out before.
Biscuit Town?
Biscuit Town's really good, too.
Well, wait, that's Track One. Are you talking about
Check One?
Oh, Check One. Yeah, Check One was the first single.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, let's do that. We'll do Check One.
Ask me why I'm here, but I come here every night. Do you need to tell her something? No, I need a place to write. And as the sea of darkness forms and casts us into night, you ask me what her name was called, but I found it hard to write. One time I was impaled forlorn and thrown into a pile. I said, you know where I'm coming from, and she looked me in the eye.
I like that there's a lot of space in that. Like, there's, it's noir, it's noir-y, like that stuff, but there's lots of space.
It's sparse, but that doesn't not do it any favors. I don't know if that's a double negative. But, like, it does do it favors that it's sparse.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I thought that was, it's really, it's basically just him. There's that fucking tenor sax at the end a little bit. There's a lot of, like, not Mellotron, not Rhodes, but anyway.
Keyboards,
but yeah.
Yes. Moody jazz keyboards.
Yeah.
It's right. Another imaginative video, and I must say that
the video is great.
As difficult as I found it to get through the album, like, I really enjoy the songs with the video.
Well, yeah, so that video, like a concept, because at the beginning of it, he's walking down the street, and his feet lift off the ground, and suddenly he's in an airplane, and the rest of it's just like this surreal experience through it, and at the end...
Yeah, it was a good video.
And at the end, he ends up, you know, being let back down, and it turns out, like, the whole video was pretty much just in his head.
There's a lot of subtle aspects to it, just the way like he refers to like looking her in the eye, and he's got a bandage on one eye, and then there's another part where he's saying that he just can't see, and he's got the little eye thing that she put on
the eye mask.
The eye mask, you know, and there's like all these little like play on words. Visuals, I guess.
The visual play makes it seem like some of those lyrics are literal when in fact, like, and then immediately we'll do something to contradict that idea.
Sure.
Like taking you through the bandage and then into what you think is his brain, but what appears to be all of a sudden storms on the outside from the airplane. Like, anyway,
handed a cigarette from somebody who's outside the airplane that he's supposedly in. What that video seemed to me, though, was like, a visual representation of what a dream actually feels like while you're having it. And it kind of makes sense to you at the time. And then you wake up and you're like, that was fucked up.
Right. Well, right. You think that it's linear and then you sort of have dreams in these little vignettes. And then your brain stitches them together when you wake back up, and then you start telling people about them. And you're like, oh, this doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
So anyway,
well,
that's,
I mean, I guess kind of what, And I think I just saw this like when I was reading through the Spotify kind of release of this, but so the release in 2015 was packaged with a 208-page book of poetry, photography, and art, and I think
this kind of
speaks to that a little bit. I think he's more of just this musician or a poet or a songwriter. I think
he's just barfing creativity all over the place, like constantly.
He is. And I think that part of maybe what I'm missing from listening to this album is that full package. And I think that maybe that's
how it's best experienced.
I love the cover
of it. I mean, it's a study in sparseness, but it's like just a plain chemtrail. But you know, like a pinkish orange streak across just a plain blue sky.
Well, and if you think about it, that's another metaphor for the ooze or the things that we leave behind that are part of this construct that, you know, our day-to-day lives that, you know, what you can't get anywhere without leaving a jet trail.
Yeah. I wonder if he'd like listen to this podcast and be like, no, really, it was just about like my, I don't know, my eating disorder.
Maybe. Anyway, that's the King Cruel record, fellas. That's the ooze.
Good shit, man.
Yeah, that's a dense one.
It is. No, yeah, there's no light conversations today. Who's got the last segment?
I do. We're going to listen to Kawhi by Third Root.
A current affair tonight.
New Third Root.
B5, 4-4. Third Root, Maui, Aoi, Jamaican rum. What a mix, what a life, what a God. Coming off a Libertad, we had to hit them hard.
Cause we're living in the state of alarm. The beat we stay on, the fight, the hate outside, and my word is bond. Just another day in the life, standing up for rights. With my people by my side, we gon' be alright.
Take a flight, we spread wings, we fly into it. This life is heavy, we spotters, we keep you pressing through it. Pick a song, shoot a vid, put an image to it. So you can see it how we see it when we dig into it. I got the feeling, I feel big, I feel giant, I feel king, I got the feeling.
Just fun, dude, that song fucking rules.
I told you, motherfucker.
You know, the problem with tracks about athletes or about teams is that they're almost never good. Like, they're almost never good. And even though lyrically that song is literally exactly about what you think it's going to be about,
yeah,
it's Kawhi good. Leonard, like, the beat's great.
Apparently, they're from San Antonio.
Well, and I noticed that Chicken George gets DJ Chicken George, who is a old school Austin DJ who's great, was part of that. It has been part of that act at some form or fashion. But yeah, no, I thought that was cool.
Well,
track.
So Shane's like, who has a song about just basketball? Well, I can name two.
Yeah, I know. You did.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, from the one album of theirs that I really love, from Mother's Milk, has a song called Magic Johnson, and while I'm not a Lakers fan at all, it's a really fucking good song. And then Curtis Blow has Basketball by Curtis Blow.
I remember
with the immortal lyric, Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court.
Yeah, that's pretty genius. But that song is great. It kind of reminds me of like, it's got a boom bap thing, but it also has fucking congas in it too at the same time.
Yeah, there's some San Antonio.
It's a San Antonio shit in there, right? But it's also like the way that they're rapping, it's pretty complex. And it kind of reminds, I thought it was a fucking, the first time I heard it, I thought it was a Jurassic 5 like song I hadn't heard before without the sampling. But dude, that's just a good song.
That
man.
Song's just fucking great. I've never even heard of them before.
Yeah, good stuff. My buddy in San Antonio sent it to me. And
I'm so hit or miss with hip hop, and we're just like hitting all my
I know
right
that's what
buttons.
That's why I said earlier in the show, like, get ready for the next song because you're gonna love this one too. But you and I have very similar taste in hip hop.
Yeah, like kind of more East Coast sensibility, even if
kind of more 1991.
Yeah, that too. A little more organic, I guess. I don't know.
I like the
less thuggish.
I like interesting raps. You know, like the more I feel more drawn to like the underground and stuff like that. But then sometimes that could get a little dark and weird too. So I don't know. I'll go back to
it's a little more cerebral. As I think my mother once described my taste in music, which I think sounds pretentious as fuck for me to say, but
cerebral.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you would say that, but it sounds pedestrian.
What she means is, Ryan, you're listening to R.E.M., not Sammy Hagar. I understand that.
I do love it that Sammy Hagar has a song about speeding.
Well, yeah. And, his
and
own,
it, that's
and
supposed
his
to be
tequila.
Like his how it's dangerous. Like, he just can't drive 55.
I just heard that song on the radio.
Just
the
can't
other day.
Do it.
And
physically unable, officer.
Excuse me. Yeah. I literally, sir, I can't drive 55.
Yeah, it's a condition.
Yeah, here's I've got a card. I have a note. Yeah. Anyway,
a little medic alert bracelet. Yes.
Yeah. Third Root. Well played,
yeah,
Shane.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Shane, you got us next week.
I do have next week. Unfortunately, the album that I was going to play, it has been discontinued everywhere, and I didn't plan to. I didn't look into that. So, let's just say
everywhere.
Probably not everywhere.
Okay.
But, I mean, online, everywhere.
Okay. Are we going to have to go out and buy like a $200
no.
copy of it?
No. So what you guys are going to get...
Is it from Martin Shkreli?
Is it in Gene Simmons' vault?
You're just going to have to give me a day or two to get back to you. But rest assured, it is mid to late 70s outlaw Texas country.
Oh, so great.
Whether or not I get what I want, I'm going to get another one that fits that bill.
Okay.
All right. So we have a genre. We don't have a record.
You have it. I'm pretty sure it's outlaw Texas country
mystery selection.
But no, but see what could happen is anytime
it's like one of those things where like they just have like a brown bag with a price on it. And you just kind of roll the dice.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or kind of like a Cracker Jack prize. You never know what you're gonna get.
All right. Well, let's unpack that next week.
Okay.
Till then, I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
Slipping into filth, lonely but surrounded, a new place to drown. 6 feet beneath the moon, he rose and blood sucked out, painting black and blue objects with projections of himself. It was always a mountain circle.